It's absolutely laughable when I think about all of the different euphemisms that I have come up with for World War II reenacting, where I say, oh yeah, I like to go camping. You know, we do like primitive camping. We do canvas tent, wool blanket camping. I have a friend who has a cabin. We go out to a cabin and we spend the weekend there. And people are like, oh, okay, you know, that's cool. And this, of course, is all total bullshit, but it's just a lot easier than having the conversation where it's like, oh yeah, you know, it's, I do something that you are going to really hate. Hey, everybody. Thanks for tuning in to another episode of the Reenactors Corner podcast. This is Chris here again with Ludwig and Rudy. Excited to talk to you guys. We have a special topic for today. This is something that Rudy had come up with for something that we could talk about. I think it's a great topic and we have a lot to discuss. So, Rudy, why don't you tell everybody what we're going to be talking about today?
Yeah. Hi, Chris. So today's topic is going to be broaching the topic of German reenacting with family, friends, and everyone in between. We're going to just kind of take a look at some comments that our friends in the Reenactors Corner Facebook page have mentioned and some of our own realities of German reenacting and how we broach this topic with people we work with, our loved ones, relationships, kind of the whole gamut, because obviously it's not something you just start singing from the rooftops like, hey, everyone, I'm a German reenactor. So we're going to be just kind of going through some stories and life situations of the three of us, as well as some of our listeners.
Yeah, I think about it, you know, from my own perspective, when I got started in reenacting, it was in the year 2000. There was no social media, and I was open with my friends about what I was doing. I thought that it was super awesome. I understood, of course, that it was edgy. I liked that it was edgy. I was 21 years old or whatever I was. I was absolutely insane and probably low IQ. And I didn't really realize that there are all kinds of potential negative consequences. But I'll tell you, I did find out, you know, it did have negative consequences for me at the time. Now, more than 20 years ago, of course, here we are recording this in 2024. The world has changed completely. It's an entirely different universe, different galaxy. There is no connection between now and 2000 when I started. And as far as now goes, I'm just going to come right out and say it. I keep this stuff a secret. You know, this may sound weird being a guy who's kind of vocal on the internet about reenacting, and I am actually talking now to an audience on a podcast about it. But people in my personal life, there are people that are my friends that don't really know that I do this, and I would prefer to keep it that way. And also, I have friends who do know that I do it, and if it ever comes up, I make some kind of dismissive remark about it and kind of make it seem like maybe I don't even do it anymore, or, you know, oh yeah, that, you know, whatever. Because this is going to come as a surprise to absolutely nobody on this planet, but there are a lot of people who take a dim view of dressing up in a World War II Nazi uniform and using that as a recreational good time make-believe hobby. So, you know, that's kind of where I'm at on this. Ludwig, what about you? What's your sort of personal take on this?
I think at work, any new job, I have certainly not walked in and said, this is how I spend my time at the weekends, and that's why I come back absolutely exhausted. But if the moment arises when it seems that the discussion can come up, then sometimes I will mention it. Depends how comfortable I am with people. In one of my last jobs, right before the job was due to end, we had a sort of session where everybody was talking about their hobbies and what they do. And this came up and I explained it to everybody, and people were quite enthusiastic. And then in my job after that, it went from me being very cautious and sort of saying that I do reenacting, but not indicating exactly what it was, to them gradually wheedling it out of me. And then to, from, you know, me admitting that it is in fact German Second World War reenacting that I do, to the CEO of the company walking into the office and giving me the Hitlergruß as he walked through. So it went from 0 to 60 very quickly, and nobody ever judged me in any of these situations in a negative way, so far as they said to me personally or to people that I knew that would tell me. So I never had to worry about that. But in that sense, I'm cautious. In every other sense, it is an integral part of me, and it is non-negotiable, whether it comes to family or friendships or relationships. I've spent the better part of my life in this hobby, presumably will spend the rest of my life involved in it. I have no intention of quitting it. I have no intention of sacrificing it for anybody. And so for somebody to accept me as a person in any respect, as a friend, in terms of my family, in a relationship, reenacting is absolutely non-negotiable. They would have to accommodate that. So in those spheres, I tend to bring it to the forefront and make it quite clear that this is a big thing for me, and it is what I spend my time doing.
That's very, very brave of you. Rudy, what about you? What is your strategy?
You know, Chris, you talk about the passage of time, and I can recall, like, when I first started getting into World War II history and eventually German reenacting, I was literally the Frau Maria from Sound of Music singing in the hills. I'm a reenactor. You know, I'm a reenactor. This is what I do. I love it. Look, I'm buying all this stuff from this website. I'm getting a new Seitengewehr, and I had like no shame. I had a Facebook page that was like public, and I posted all sorts of stuff, whether it be, you know, actual reenacting content, or whether it was just absurd, like Friends montage with Goering and Hitler and Goebbels at the Obersalzberg with like the Friends theme song playing in the background. And now I'm just extremely guarded all these years later. And, you know, it's something I try and keep a little bit private and keep to myself until I start to warm up to others or people see the kind of person that I am. But it is fascinating to see how times have changed. You know, you go from this naive newbie reenactor who just is so excited to be doing something he's always dreamed of doing since, you know, childhood. And then all of a sudden it's like, whoa, whoa, I need to pump my brakes. Like, other people are noticing that I'm posting this stuff, and it's very uncouth. And I have family members who are scratching their heads as to like why I'm posting what I'm doing. And, you know, I wondering, have you started taking drugs? Like, where is this coming from? So seeing that change after, you know, 13, 14, 15 years is pretty wild to see where I started from and where I am now. And I know we're going to talk a little bit about it, but I do keep things very guarded, especially in the workplace, being in the world of education. I will say, though, that because I am a history teacher, if you look at my resume, I actually do have reenacting right on my resume. And the first one is American Civil War reenacting, because I used to do American Civil War reenacting, followed by a nationally recognized organization, World War II organization that I belong to. And it says right on there, World War II German reenacting. It describes what it is that I do in terms of like going to schools, talking about the history of World War II, living history events, etc. And I've been fortunate enough to only have 2 or 3 jobs since I've had that on my resume. And I've always been met with like really positive remarks. There's not really been head scratching or people, you know, they ask, oh, tell me a little bit more about it. But I've never not gotten a job because of it. So I always thought that was a little interesting, but it's definitely a tricky thing to navigate.
You know, everybody's different. And this is true for reenactors. This is true for our listeners. And even for us, where all three of us are in really kind of different situations, live in different places. I'm sure there are a lot of listeners who can say with absolute sincerity that they've never had any problem being super open about reenacting with anybody, and they never will. And they probably never will. For me, in the circles that I exist in the worlds that I am in. Look, I'm not actually reenacting World War II every second of every day. I have other aspects and dimensions to my life. I have other hobbies. I have other types of circles of friends. And unfortunately for me, I'm not in a situation where I don't have anything to fear from anybody finding out about this stuff. It used to be years ago, before 2017, before the whole Donald Trump thing that happened in the United States, where I was very open with people that I collected, Nazi memorabilia. Let's just call it what it is. I collect stuff. Obviously, I collect stuff that is related to World War II. I collect items that are related to the military. But in general, I do have just stuff that has swastikas on it. And I used to post about that on Instagram, and I wasn't shy about anybody finding out about that. If anybody would get upset about it, I could simply point to, figures like Lemmy from Motorhead, right? No one has anything bad to say about that guy. Everybody loves Motorhead. He had a whole room full of this stuff, too, because he thought that it looked cool. And I could just say, hey, look, I like the aesthetic of this stuff. I'm interested in the history. I think this stuff is cool. This is rock and roll, and I like this stuff. But then after 2016, this started to become a problem for me. I'm not going to get super into the details of this, because just in case there's anybody out there who doesn't like me, I don't want to give anybody a roadmap for how to destroy my life. But I started to get a lot of blowback about the collection stuff. And I remember reading people talking about me online, and somebody bringing up a photo that I had posted on Instagram of an original tunic. And it was like, can you believe how sick this guy is? He even owns a uniform. And people in the comments just being like, oh my God, I can't believe it. This guy owns a Nazi uniform. This is crazy. And it's like, if these people knew that I not only owned a uniform, but that I actually have a set of, quote unquote, Nazi uniforms here that I wear for fun, that would basically be the end of certain dimensions of my endeavor in life. And so, for that reason, fortunately for me, I guess, Instagram deleted a lot of my accounts and photos over having shown World War II items. So that stuff is not online anymore. But I have to be very careful in how I present this to people, and in what I can and can't tell people, and who can and can't have a window into this part of my life. And this is just something that I totally accept. I don't expect people who are outside of my small circle of close friends to really be able to understand me or know where I'm coming from. So they just don't get let into this part of me. And that's how I have to operate.
Yeah, I mean, I, from where you come from, I sympathize with you more than I can actually explain. But I come from a completely opposite perspective, in that I have dealt with people ridiculing me online, harassing me online. I've had police visits as a result of harassment online for reenacting and for expressing opinions which are not the accepted norm. And I've got to say, I've relished all of it. I've enjoyed all of it. The idea that I am thought of by somebody to the extent that they are bent double by hatred, that they have to spend their time worrying over me, is deeply satisfying. And in all of my posts and in all of my... anything that I do online is essentially characterized by the idea that I simply don't care. I have seen my Tinder profile posted on Twitter, because of course I have all of my pictures on there, and people absolutely gagging at the mouth in hatred over it. But it has always been, to me, fun. It has always been about fun and about not caring about this. So what somebody thought about me or could do to me because I choose to spend my time in this way has always seemed immaterial. I mean, if they want to imagine this sort of character or this caricature of me, then they're welcome to it, and it doesn't bother me. But I just put it out there always, and if somebody starts an argument about it, or if they choose to become aggressive or harassing about it, then I either choose to try and engage them constructively and explain what it is and what it's about, or if that fails, then I, you know, can always change my strategy towards simply allowing them to do whatever they will do and living my life. It's not as if they can do anything towards me that's actually meaningful unless they decide to take matters into their own hands, which none of them ever do because at a fundamental level, they're always cowards. So I've dealt with everything in the full span of this hobby. I mean, I remember in 2008 when the documentary in Britain was aired, Weekend Nazis, where the BBC interviewed members of Second Battle Group and a lot of other groups at the War and Peace show, quite a famous show in the UK, and they outed a load of them as holding opinions which were not considered appropriate in any context, never mind dressed as a soldier of the Waffen-SS. And I was at that very show where that was recorded, and I was a very young boy at the time, and I remember coming home and then that broadcast being aired, and my dad at the time, he said that I shouldn't be spending time with people like this. Well, of course, I had never interacted with any of these people. I was never involved with any of these groups. And to me, reenacting is, and always has been, about the hobby itself and about having fun. I've had the immense fortune in all of my time in reenacting German Second World War to never interact with people that choose to do this hobby for political reasons, except when they're allied reenactors, English people that believe that Britain is the greatest country on the planet and they're rabid nationalists. Well, as far as I'm concerned, that's fine by me. Let them crack on with whatever they want to crack on with. But in the full span of 17 years of reenacting, I've never met any German Second World War reenactor who began to broach neo-Nazi opinions for the purpose of the hobby. And whenever these people, whether it is, you know, somebody that you meet in a bar, which I've had happen to me before. I've had it happen in a conversation where I was having a conversation with my brother that was completely unrelated to this person, and they decided to jut in and ask me what I was talking about. So I explained to them, and then they told me that they were Jewish, and I explained, "Well, we're all right then, because I'm gay, you're Jewish. They would have killed both of us. It's fine." But he still decided to spend the rest of the evening turning this into an issue, and so eventually we left him to his own devices. But people will always, always, always choose something to attack and hate on. And if you give them the opportunity, then of course they're going to use it. But in essence, what I've always tried to do is just live my life and for people to accept it as it is. And if they want to choose to make it, you know, something that they can attack me over or spend their time obsessing over, more loss to them. If they spend their time thinking about me, then that for me is... I quite enjoy that in an odd sort of way.
I think that's really admirable, and I used to be in a situation where I could live that way, but unfortunately for me now, having faced kind of the being canceled and this, frankly, you know, bullshit that I've had to go through, seeing how this affected people close to me, people that I love and that I work with, various projects on that I work with in various capacities, seeing them have to try to answer to people who are looking to create problems for me, looking to put pressure on them. You know, I don't want anybody to have to go through that kind of stuff anymore. So, you know, it's kind of a, for me, it's like a pick your battles thing and trying to rehabilitate in the minds of Americans the idea of having a swastika emblem on your clothes and that's okay because of some specific set of circumstances that you are in when you do this thing for fun. It's just like not going to work for me. Rudy, you had also mentioned, you know, like you said, friends, coworkers, and everyone in between. You talked a little bit about coworker stuff and your resume. What about in your personal life with like dating and you know, romantic relations or with your family? Mm-hmm. You know, what's your strategy with that stuff now, or what's your experience with it?
Well, I guess I kind of have stories for both per se, but to Ludwig's point, it kind of talks about, and Ludwig, I applaud you for your boldness. And I believe the term is what, the Freudenschade, the joy in other people's suffering. You know, these people who torment themselves just contemplating why you do German reenacting. But I think it really is about people's mindset, because you have to gauge what they're going to think. And I know for myself personally, when I first started reenacting, I told my grandma, I said, oh, yeah, I'm getting into reenacting. And she goes, that's fantastic. What is it you're going to be doing? And I told her, well, I'm going to be a grenadier in Großdeutschland Division. And she's like, what? And so I was very kind of nonchalant about it. And she just couldn't fathom why I wanted to do German reenacting at first. And it was because, you know, she grew up during that time period. Three of her brothers served in the Air Force. And her one brother was actually shot down over Frankfurt and spent 2 years in a prisoner of war camp. So the thought that, like, her grandson wanted to go and, like, be the quote-unquote Nazis just made zero sense to her. And my dad, in the same kind of vein, was like, well, why do you want to be, well, why the Germans? Like, don't you want to be a U.S. soldier? And, you know, my obvious response was, no, those guys look like bums. Like, they just came out of the factory. You know, the Germans had all the cool weapons, the sharp looking uniforms, the technology, the tanks, you know. And so broaching that topic with family was always a little bit touchy. And much like your pub story there, Ludwig, I have several family members that are Jewish. And so just having that conversation with them in terms of, like, why in God's name are you doing this was very difficult. But I think it goes back to what we were talking about, people's mindsets, and do they truly know you? You know, that's, and I'm with coworkers, I'm not out here saying, like, yeah, I'm going to go away for the weekend and I'm going to dress up in a German uniform and, you know, pretend I'm fighting the Soviets, you know, continuing the Third Reich. But you have to kind of gauge them as individuals and what they know and feel about you, because my family very quickly realized, like, okay, well, I know Will is not some racist who is all about white power and, like, creating the Fourth Reich. So if people know your heart and know your mind and where that passion lies, I think it's a lot easier to slowly open up to people. You know, over years working in a school, like, I've had coworkers kind of come and rib me and stuff and joke around, but it's never been anything that I've been fearful, like, oh boy, I'm going to lose my job. So I think you just have to kind of take it with a grain of salt in terms of family and coworkers. And if they know who you are and they know your heart, then eventually after that first kind of shock and awe wears off, they come around to it. I do have some relationship issues, and as some of you know, I got out of a long-term relationship last May, so I'm kind of thinking about dipping my toes back in the water. I gotta say, Ludwig, the fact that you have German reenacting pictures up on your Tinder is it's just mind-boggling, because I'll be honest, you're hearing it first on the airwaves. I kind of thought, oh, well, you know, maybe I'll open up a Tinder account and see what that's all about. And I got, like, all the way to the part where you had to add a picture of yourself. And I realized I have, like, no pictures of me unless I'm wearing a German uniform. So I...
Yeah, I'm the same. I'm the same. I don't have any... All of my best pictures are me in German uniform.
Yeah.
What am I supposed to do? What do you do? You know, and I mean, kills two birds with one stone. Keeps the people that find that offensive away, and attracts the people that, you know, think, oh, that's kind of cool, or, you know, maybe really like. Besides, everybody loves a man in uniform.
So. Needless to say, I did not finish my account. It is still sitting there empty because I felt I didn't have a picture that was fitting enough to add. But my previous relationship was actually very strenuous for this very reason. She, you know, she never really quite understood why I wanted to get into German reenacting, no matter how many times we sat down and I explained to her, like, you know, the man that I am, like, I'm not trying to further some kind of racist ideology. But it actually put a very big strain on her and her family, because her family just couldn't understand why she was interested in a person that did something like that. And as complete happenstance, her father started looking into it, and there was, my impression's name is Rudolf Lange, and there was a Rudolf Lange that was like a head commandant of one of the concentration camps. And so, you know, he called me, he said, hey, I want to chat with you one-on-one, mano a mano one time. And we sat down, he's like, look, I found all this stuff. Like, is this what you're trying to recreate? And so I had to do my best to kind of explain it to him, but it caused such a rift that my then at the time girlfriend didn't even talk to her parents for 2 years. So on one hand, you know, I give her a lot of credit for having that faith in me as a person and knowing my heart and like my thoughts. But at the same time, that's like 2 years they'll never get back with her parents. So, and there was a little girl in the picture too. So it's like her grandparents weren't even seeing their grandchild for 2 years. So, I don't know. That's
absolutely insane.
Isn't it? It's absolutely wild.
That is shocking. And like, this is crazy. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. That's awful, Rudy. That's horrible that ever happened.
Yeah, it's absolutely horrific too. Rudy, you are not by any means the only person that I have known or talked to in reenacting who had some kind of rift with their in-laws or some other kind of family rift or whatever about reenacting. And it's just, it's so, I don't know. You know, at one time when I was new to reenacting, I don't know, I would have felt differently about this. But at this point now, for me, where I'm at, I just never, ever again want to have to make any kind of disclaimer or minimize how much I'm interested in World War II or make some kind of disavowal to throw somebody a bone to get them off my trail. I just, it's like ashes in my mouth to have to say that. The, you know, even people, you know, I try not to get kind of too personal here about my life, but people in my life who said like when things started to change socioculturally in America in 2017 after various, you know, public news spectacle things that I had nothing to do with took place, and people would come up to me and say, geez, Chris, you know, we got to talk. Are you a supporter of this sick ideology? Are you one of these evil people, you know? And on some level, there's some part of me that just wants to be like, okay, what if I am? What if I am? What if I was? Does that mean we can't be friends anymore? Because if that's what this conversation is going to be about, just whatever the worst case thing that you can think of that I might say, let's just assume that's where we're at, you know, and let's just take it from that point, because I just can't do this stuff anymore. It's like, I'm tired of, you know, I don't know why. I'm 44 years old. I've been interested in World War II my whole life. For a lot of weird reasons, I wound up being particularly interested in the German side of World War II and the Third Reich. This is just kind of how things developed. My interest as a collector, my interest in, you know, people that I talked to, that I met, veterans that I was able to interview, whatever it was. And here I am now in a time where you're just not allowed to really even be interested in this stuff. I had someone just this week on Facebook saying, you know, there's aspects of history I don't think we should even be looking into anymore. You know, we shouldn't even be asking questions about this. We shouldn't even be investigating this. Why does this need to be investigated? And it's like, well, because if that's the attitude, if like, it's just like, you know, we shouldn't even be talking about history, there's nothing that I can say to redeem myself. There's nothing that I can do to make myself look better, and I'm just not even going to try. But
why would you want to? Why would you want to is my question. Now, I understand you have a lot of personal reasons for this, and this isn't an expression to you. This is me just venting. But why? I would not want, if anybody said that to me, they would be dead to me. They're dead completely. I have no interest in speaking to anybody that says we should not investigate an era of history because it might potentially be harmful today. You know, that to me is so asinine, so stupid, so chronic and gross that the person that expresses that viewpoint, I don't want to be near them. I don't engage with them. That is a waste of my time to speak to or engage with somebody like that. If you cannot look at history clinically in an almost sterile way, then you shouldn't be looking at history. You should spend your time doing other things. And as an addition to that, you shouldn't spend your time worrying about the people that are choosing to look at history and make discoveries or make discussion about history, because obviously you're not emotionally or mentally equipped to do that. And this is the problem that we find, I think, today, is that people who are not emotionally or mentally equipped to discuss history in a clinical way are occupying positions of historical discussion. And I notice this constantly in every single realm of discussion, whether it is from the Roman army to the Third Reich, whatever kind of discussion that you can come up with, there is somebody that is turning it into an emotional and personal bonanza and ruining it for everybody and ruining it in historical terms. And as far as I'm concerned, I wouldn't want to waste my time or my effort or my energy talking about anything with somebody like that, because what a waste. What a complete waste.
I couldn't agree more. Like the guy that said that to me this past week, I just blocked that guy on Facebook. I'm not going to argue that point with that guy. I mean, that if your standpoint is like, we shouldn't even really be looking at history, this conversation is over and you and I should never talk again, kind of is my feeling on that.
You know, that's something that really vexes me, is kind of along that same mindset, is that we as reenactors catch so much shade, like so much criticism, so much like head scratching, like, oh, you must be Neo, because we don these uniforms and we go out and enjoy ourselves over the weekend. And if you looked at a scholar who I have dozens and dozens and dozens of books in my house on World War II. And if you don't see the public being like, oh, well, this guy wrote a book about understanding Hitler, like he's got to be obviously, you know, he's got to be of the mindset of some of the same similar ideology. They don't catch the shade because they're published, written authors. However, we same passionate historians who choose to learn our history by living it catch unholy hell for it. And it's just shocking to me because in many terms, we hold just as much historical information and knowledge on this time period as some of these guys who are writing these books. So for me, that's just, it's just really vexing because it's almost like people put blinders on. Like if I were to go write a book, I would be considered, oh, this guy's doing great things for academia and history. But just because I choose to don the Marschstiefel in the Feldbluse instead of picking up a pen and writing a book about it, I'm considered some sort of like Untermensch.
Well, it's against the rules, you know. There are acceptable and not acceptable ways to handle these subjects, and you know, from a like a mainstream perspective, the dress up way, the living history way, is like not an acceptable way. And I realized this long ago. I am a person who values honesty and truthfulness a lot. I hate to have to lie to people. It hurts my soul. But despite that, it's absolutely laughable when I think about all of the different euphemisms that I have come up with for World War II reenacting to tell coworkers or bosses or, you know, distant family or friends' family or, you know, girls, family, or whatever it is, where I say, oh yeah, I like to go camping. You know, we do like primitive camping. We do canvas tent, wool blanket camping. I have a friend who has a cabin. We go out to a cabin and we spend the weekend there. And then sometimes when I have to be like, when I have to explain certain things, I'll say, oh, I've got some friends who are in a club where they restore military vehicles and they do like car shows, you know, they have special vehicle shows for military vehicles. And I'm not in the club, you know, I don't have a vehicle or anything, but I like to help my friends out. Sometimes I go help them do the car shows or whatever. And people are like, oh, okay, you know, that's cool. And this, of course, is all total bullshit. And, you know, it's too bad that I have to do this, but it's just a lot easier than having the conversation where it's like, oh yeah, you know, it's, I do something that you are going to really hate.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I belong to a vintage hiking club. I've used that a lot. just to explain different things. And, you know, now that I'm kind of trying to get back into like the dating realm or making new friends, it is interesting because I've been navigating the waters of, okay, we've gone out a couple of times. Like, I enjoy your company. Like, you know, I'm into history. Well, you go away to a lot of weekends. Well, when I stop in your office, you have a lot of World War II books. So it's like, you're slowly inching. The pendulum is slowly swinging back and forth, back and forth. And soon it's about to strike the toll where I have to be like, well, actually, I have a lot of memorabilia and enjoy doing, you know, World War II German reenacting. So the few conversations I've had that have gotten to that point have actually all been pretty positive. But I think that goes back to the fact that, like, I didn't come right out and say it right away. Like, I built up that trust. I build up that understanding of who I am as a person, like my heart and my mind. Okay, now I'm going to let you know this is something I'm super passionate about and it's a deal breaker, you know? So it's been interesting seeing the passage of time in regards to that revelation.
It's just crazy. Like if I was ever, I think, going to try to date somebody, I don't know what I would say. I think I would be better off telling them that I am addicted to video games and pornography or telling them that I'm in a satanic cult or something. I think that would be more acceptable than like what it is that I actually do for a hobby. Mm. So
No, I disagree. I disagree.
Well, what do you find when you're dating people?
What's they
like it? I mean, what is the deal here?
People are interested. People are interested, and as much as there is this facade of, you know, that you are supposed to be pre-programmed to hate this stuff, people like it. They like the fact that it's interesting. I mean, the thing you say there is it encapsulates the whole discussion to me, where you say, you know, you better put on a persona of being addicted to porn and spending all your time video gaming. People find that asinine. It's boring. Oh, you spend all of your time indoors, sitting at a screen. Whatever it is that you're doing, whether it's hand on a console or hand on something else, that's what you spend. Oh great. You join the billions of other people that spend all of their time doing that. Whereas what we do is, in my opinion, and I'm sure many people will be like, yeah, fact check for you here, buddy, but in my opinion, is interesting. It involves an actual doing of things. You go out, you sit in a dirt hole with your mates, and you talk about life, and you try and live something else other than what you're already living, in spite of nearly 100 years difference. That, to me, is interesting. It has always been interesting from the beginning, and every single serious partner I've ever had, almost every single casual partner I've ever had, has thought, that's interesting. Now, some people have, before or afterwards, made an issue of it, and then that has resulted in something different, an argument, or, you know, you've been blocked or ghosted, whatever, that's immaterial. You walk away from that. But in all of the meaningful experiences I've ever had, people have said, what you do is really interesting, I want to know more about it, I want to understand more about it. I've never had a negative reaction. On the other hand, you ask how my dating experiences have gone. I have been banned from nearly every single dating app that I've ever used. Tinder, Hinge. Those are the two that I have ever used. Another one that we won't mention, but those two. I've been banned from them repeatedly. I have to use a burner phone for Tinder. I am not even joking. I have to use a burner phone that connects to the hotspot from my other phone because I have been banned so many times for using reenacting pictures. I swear on my mother's life, I've never done anything on Tinder that would break the terms and conditions of Tinder, but I have been banned a million times from that app for just having reenacting pictures. And, you know, I had a date a couple of weeks ago and I was banned from it. The week before the date, I had to make a new account, had to borrow my friend's mobile number to make a new one in time for that, to connect with the person again to say, yeah, I'm still on for this date. That is the gymnastics I have to go through because of the people that are just like, oh, I saw somebody dressed as a German soldier. I'm going to report their account. And people will match with you to start an argument with you. And you're like, yeah, this is how I spend my time. I do this. And they're like, well, aren't you ashamed? No, I personally plan to do it until I'm 90. I'm going to be that little, you know, Volkssturm man in a wheelchair with a Panzerfaust or something like that. And they're like, you know, this is horrible. What you do is horrible, and it's anti-Semitic. And it's like, how can it be anti-Semitic? I've just bought a pack of Bamba from Tesco. How can I be anti-Semitic? And it just, you know, it's just nonsense. The whole thing is nonsense. It is people choosing to be offended by something because they want to be. Because everybody has to be offended by something. You got to spend your time doing something. What better to be than offended
this
by
is a very easy
and
thing
fighting a just cause.
To get offended about, right? I mean, this is like the most offensive. This is arguably the most offensive thing you could do, almost, I would say.
Is it though? I mean,
well, beyond,
you know,
like, you know, I mean, I guess, like,
yes,
being a,
yeah,
you know,
no,
crimes,
yeah,
like certain crimes that you can commit are more offensive, but like short of stuff that goes into the criminal thing, I just feel like, I don't know, maybe it's the people that I am surrounded with, but like, this is like sick to them, right? This is like the worst possible thing.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. No, you're right. But you're worrying about me spending my weekends trying to in some way connect to people that, you know, might well have been on a front line somewhere thinking, I don't want anything to do with this. I don't want to be fighting this war. And I'm not saying that as an excuse for German reenacting. I'm saying that as a kind of example, but there will have been, of that 10 million man army, many thousands of men that were fighting because they were required to fight, not because they wanted to fight. And it's something that we do is an expression of that, in my view. And so these people, I think the people that criticize this are just boring and not worth engaging with. And we don't have anything to prove to them. The only time that I ever get annoyed with this hobby is when people bring politics into the hobby. But when people make politics of the hobby, then, you know, I'll always be there to defend it, not because it necessarily is worthy of defending, but because I enjoy it, and I think they're wrong.
Yeah, I agree, of course, but, you know, we share a perspective on this that most people just are not going to be able to. You know, the people listening to this who are reenactors share the perspective. I think we all, you know, not to make generalizations about reenactors, but I just don't know. We are kind of like a breed apart, I think, on some level, whether we realize it or not. We find this fun for some reason, and most people probably wouldn't. But I guess to that point, we had posted on the Reenactors Corner Facebook page asking other people about what their experiences were with this subject. And it got actually a real lot of responses. It got far too many responses for us to read all of them or even most of them. But I think the majority of people probably said that they were totally open about it, which is, you know, great for them. I'm sure there are a lot of people who are going to be able to go their whole lives telling everybody that they know that they do reenacting and they're not going to face any problems. So, you know, good for them. And maybe if you're listening to this, maybe you're in that category. And I guess I'm jealous of you in a way. I got a couple of private messages from people that I thought were interesting, and I would like to read that. I'll just launch into this first one. A guy who I am not going to name writes, I am in the U.S. intelligence community, and I also do security management for defense contractors and military. I have found that readily sharing my hobby and answering questions, showing photos and videos to my coworkers and superiors has actually worked well for me. I think if I were to try and hide an aspect of my life, it would bring more suspicion and doubt as to my motives. I actually made a calendar a few years back with a bunch of my unit's reenactment photos and had it at work in a secure environment. Got a lot of compliments on it. I get the occasional wisecrack, but always in good humor, and no one has ever, to my knowledge, cast aspersions against me. I sport a high fade haircut daily and get nothing but compliments and the occasional joke, but never any shade. I just own what I do. All my past girlfriends and my wife thought it's a super neat hobby. My wife actually joined me at a couple of events while we were still dating. She went as a partisan. We have 3 kids now, including a 3-week-old, so we agreed I would take a break from the hobby for a few years until they're old enough to not need constant supervision. I had a clearance investigation that took place back in 2016. We have to have them every few years. When it came time for my interview with the investigating agent, my coworkers were interviewed about me before I was interviewed. They told me before I went in that the agent had asked about my reenacting. I don't know if they looked at Facebook or what. I had all my privacy settings clamped down. During my interview, the agent asked me directly about it, so I was just super upfront and chill about it. They thought it was interesting and didn't seem to take issue. My investigation concluded in my favor, so no harm done. In the end, I suppose anyone who does this hobby would do well to know their audience. There may come a time or place where it may not serve my interests to openly share the hobby at work.
I'm really glad that that worked out in favor for that guy, because I know of others who have gone through something similar and it hasn't been that positive. But, you know, I'm actually sitting in my work office right now and I have two pictures right on my desk of some of my closest unit member friends, you know, in our uniforms. And so I think, you know, it is important to kind of own up to it, be honest with it, because once you start to try and hide it or make it seem as if it's something that's not, that's when I feel like the doubt and the fear start to kind of creep in a little bit. But God love that guy. I mean, I know a new baby is pretty important, but I don't know if it could take a couple of years off from reenacting.
Yeah, I guess I could if I had to. And it sounds like he has to. He actually wrote like a little bit more about that I didn't read, about leaving his wife alone with three children for a few days, which I totally get that that's a lot to ask of somebody. Another message that I got was from another Facebook friend of mine who I'm also going to keep anonymous. This is someone who lives in Europe, I believe, so a little bit of a different perspective. He writes, I might submit the following advice. Always create a reenactment profile for social media purposes and don't let it get mixed in with your personal account. While it's an annoying thing to continuously switch between profiles, you can never be careful enough. Reenactment accounts get banned all the time, and it might be annoying to keep sending your colleagues friend requests because you're primary account got banned, especially if you then need to explain why it got banned. On my reenactment account, I also only add fellow reenactors. Several colleagues have already seen my reenactment account in their friend suggestions, and many have requested to be added, but I simply make it a no-go. All it takes is one colleague showing a picture of you in uniform to some other coworkers, and before you know it, you might run into issues. Mind you that I'm extremely open about my hobby to my colleagues, often telling funny reenactment stories during lunch. The main difference is that in those instances, I can control the narrative and reply directly to any questions or doubts they might have about possible wrong intentions or glorification about Nazi Germany. Funnily, this only applies to German reenactment. I do Napoleonic reenactment too, and used to do medieval reenactment, and while the hobby in general can be regarded as a bit weird, no other period comes to mind that shares the same stigma. My mother, for example, would be way less worried had I not chosen the Axis side of World War II, and she regularly mentions I picked the wrong side when telling her about the difficulties we sometimes run into when asking for permits for events, etc. It's simply something we can't deny and we should take into account when creating an online presence. A young member in our group who had yet to turn 18 at the time did not heed this advice. He mixed his reenactment social media with his private one and had all the typical youthful enthusiasm symptoms, as I will call them, about this newly discovered hobby, spending all his money on it, constantly talking about it, showing pictures of himself in his kit, etc. When he entered the military academy, some of his fellow classmates discovered his passion for World War II Germany, and some of the training cadre were informed. Some of these dealt with it in a good way, but for others, he now was known as a Nazi sympathizer, and it really hindered his military academic training to the point that he dropped out and now works a low-paid job. Last but not least, no matter what period one reenacts, it has a large influence on one's life. We used to say, reenactment isn't a hobby, it's a lifestyle, and I feel the saying still holds true. If a partner has difficulties dealing with this hobby or lifestyle, I've rarely known it to work in the long run. And now I'm not even talking about actively participating in it, but just living together. Reenactment typically takes up a large chunk of money, space in the house, and free time, and it's therefore important to have a partner who's open and comfortable with that lifestyle. I thought that was a really interesting message. Horrifying to hear the kind of worst case story about the young man who maybe his whole life is going to be different because of negative blowback that he got about reenacting. But I can certainly see how something like that could happen.
Yeah, I know a lot of people are guarded in regards to that, especially when you start talking about particular like high level security jobs or very public jobs. And, you know, I can empathize with that to a certain degree. And I do think back about, you know, the beginning of the podcast, we talked about being a young reenactor and just posting everything. And now I feel like it's a counter espionage and intelligence game. Okay, what account am I on? Am I posting the picture to the right account? I got to switch this. I got to switch that. Oh, I accidentally friend requested someone that's not a reenactor. And I got to go back and delete. So it can be very vexing, but I guess in the long run, it's good for self-preservation to a certain degree.
I relate to that with the multiple accounts thing. It really is sometimes absolutely horrifying when I suddenly am like on Instagram, for example, it's like, oh my God, did I just post a reenactment picture to some like account that I use for some other purpose? And I'm having a heart attack until I go in and double check.
No, I used to do that and then I gave up on it. I have two accounts. I have one main account for me personally, which I never use. And then I have my reenacting account. And I used to always switch over to my main account to message people on Facebook about buying their car or information about their car. And now I just don't. It's just like this guy who is dressed as a German is asking about your Rover 75 and if it has a sunroof because you haven't clearly taken pictures in your Facebook ad. I don't care. What's he going to do? He's not going to sell me the car because it's a guy with a German profile picture. You know what I mean? I gave up. When I get banned and I have to friend request Chris for the 700th time and you, Rudy, probably for the maybe 20th time, then maybe I'll think about it again. But I don't know. I give up on that.
It's really funny. I have three Facebook accounts, at least three, right? Like I have my regular normal account for my family and stuff, and then I have my reenactment account, and then I have a secret reenactment account just to get into all the reenactment groups that have banned my regular reenactment account. So I mainly only use the two, like the reenactment account and my regular account. And then there are certain things that I have no problem with doing on my reenactment account. All of the antique typewriter collector groups, I've joined those with my reenactment account. There are people in those groups who really don't like what I'm about. That's fine. To hell with them. They collect antique office machines. They're just as insane as I am. But then, like, for whatever reason, like groups where I talk about one of my other hobbies, like collecting Native American artifacts, I look for arrowheads as a hobby. I don't engage with those groups at all for my reenactment account. I don't really know why. I mean, it's just because I'm insane or whatever. But yeah, it is weird trying to run multiple social media accounts. I used to have two reenactment accounts that I used interchangeably so that if one of them got deleted or was in Facebook jail, I would still have the other one. And that actually worked out because that account did get deleted, but I still had one that I could use to be in touch with people in the community that I want to be in touch with.
It's for all the posts, Chris. All the posts.
So many were lost.
We're not talking about
this.
That.
Is well,
I know they were because I had them saved. I had them saved, and I thought, you know, maybe you should actually like screenshot these and save them. And I thought, no, I'll get around to it one day. And then the account was deleted, and the posts were gone. And when I asked them if you still had the stuff, it was just gone.
I've tried to be better about like when I post stuff on Facebook that is like an effort post that is some kind of information that I put together or a translation. I try to also post that on my website so that at least that's a space that I can control for the most part. That's not like a social media account that could go away at any time. But, you know, I was never 100% about doing that. And so there's information that I had posted on Facebook that I hadn't saved in any other way at all. And it would be very hard for me to find that information again in some cases. So it is very frustrating. Rudy, we had talked about some other comments. We chatted a little bit before we started recording, and we were talking about some of the other listener comments on the Facebook page, and you had mentioned some that you thought were interesting.
Yeah, and I know that I'll just briefly touch on a few of them because we actually have discussed quite a few of the points that I had originally wanted to talk about. But I know that one of the members had mentioned being at work, and he said, "I was on a job site and it was cold. I wore an unmarked Luftwaffe greatcoat. When I returned to the office, the cafeteria had people in it and I wanted to wash my hands. My haircut combined with my coat caused a higher level manager to randomly straight arm salute me in front of about 25 people. I filed a human resources complaint and trashed him to other employees. That same guy has done that salute at me since." And of course, the salute is the Hitler Gruß. And Ludwig, you know, you had mentioned that a little bit earlier. But that's the sort of thing that can get you really into trouble. And it's Mike. I have a cousin of mine who anytime we'd be around in a public setting, he'd be like, "Oh, you wearing your Nazi shit?" Like real loud, real vocal. And he would give me the Hitler Gruß. And I'm like, dude, that's what's going to get me in a lot of trouble. Like, that's not who I am. That's not why I do this. This isn't what I'm about. And, I actually used to work at a big grocery chain store called Wegmans. And there was like one time, you know, I was kind of like, "Wear your favorite hat day" or whatever. And oddly enough, I actually am a certified Cicerone, which is like kind of like a wine sommelier, but for beer. So it's so talking about like beer tastings and what would pair well with it with food. So I had all this training through Wegmans and this was my job. And so I actually wore one of my Schmitz for this hat day to work. Of course, I had like a little piece of tin foil over the Hakenkreuz that was grasping the Adler's claws. But, you know, everyone thought it was the coolest hat. Until one guy came up and was like, "I know what the hat is." And he was like trying to bait me into like getting into an argument about stuff. And on cold days, I used to like wear my Übermantel to work when we had heavy snowfalls here south of Buffalo. And now it's just like, it's not worth it to me trying to get into that stuff. So I think that kind of tied into like the workplace thing. I know other people had commented about, "Oh, you know, everyone thought it was really cool when I wore my German regalia out for Halloween." But I don't, for me, I just stay completely away from that. And my mindset now, it's like, I donned the Feldblusa to honor the veterans and the sacrifice and hardships that they endured. And so like, I'll never wear anything like that for Halloween. But it just kind of reminded me that listener's comment about some odd behaviors you'll see in the workplace and how some gentle joking and ribbing is fine, but then it gets to that extent and you can just, it just is too much. It's not worth the headache, at least in my opinion.
Yeah, I like to wear a gray coat and stuff sometimes, and I get some negative reactions about it occasionally. It just kind of comes with the territory. I got to be me, you know?
Mm-hmm. Well, I saw that picture recently of you and your Drillik Anzug at work by your press. Man, that was so cool. That was really impressive. And I, as a fellow historian, I love seeing that. That was pretty awesome.
Well, it's funny because I used to just wear straight up uniform stuff to work to age it. Like I would wear absolutely I would wear like full uniform stuff. I would wear stuff that had insignia on it, and it would get dirty and I would sweat through it at the shop. And my boss never said anything about it. And I just thought he never really noticed it. And then one day he asked me to go run out and do something where I was going to meet with a customer or something. And I was like, geez, I don't know. I should have worn a different jacket. I was wearing a marsh pattern smock, which is just kind of a weird looking garment. You know, it's not anything inherently offensive. Most people would just see it as a camouflage smock, but a camouflage smock isn't really a thing that you want. It's not a very professional looking thing to be wearing when you're meeting with a customer. And I mentioned to my boss that I should that I should maybe have worn something different. He said, well, I don't have a problem with you wearing that. At least that doesn't have a swastika on it. And I was like, oh, he did notice.
I never had any problems wearing kit, but I did at one office that I used to work in. The heating broke and everybody was freezing. It was, and I mean, literally it was freezing. It was so cold in this cubic modern office block. And so I gave up and I just started wearing my Wintertan Anzug every day. I wore the full thing, the Sumpftan suit, into work. And people started to get jealous because it was the perfect thing to wear. You know, if you wore something fairly warm, it would keep you just a little bit more, you know, you'd be a little bit happier. But this thing, I just sat there like snug as a bug throughout each shift, completely unmoved by the freezing cold temperature until they fixed the heating. But I never had any, you know, I never had any word of reprisal. I used to wear my greatcoat to college at one time, many, many years ago, when it was freezing cold, and I never had any kind of comment about it. But I think people knew ultimately what it was in the back of their heads. They just, maybe they didn't bother to say.
Yeah, I think sometimes we think we're getting away with stuff, and then you know, maybe people are a little more clever than we give them credit for sometimes.
I'm actually very interested to see how this works, because I just recently signed on to be a co-advisor at my school for this club called Quest. And it's actually a hiking club for three schools in my district. And we teach kids about proper gear, how to survive out in the woods, how to go on these long treks, learning about endurance, health. And it's really cool because we go on a 1 day hike, then we go on a 2 day hike, and then it culminates with us going on a 4 day trek, with about 100 kids from these three schools. And I'm extremely excited to do it. But when I first signed on, you know, I actually have climbed about 16 of the 46 peaks in the Adirondack Mountains here on the East Coast, and climbed numerous other peaks throughout the country. And so I'm looking forward to tackling more of those 46. But when asked about joining, I actually said that, like, well, I actually do vintage hiking. And of course, I was talking about reenacting and some of the long treks we've gone on and the rucksack that we use. And so I'm debating on what kind of gear I can get away with using for this 4 day hike, because I can obviously bring my Esbit stove, my Kokushir, my Feldflasche. So I'm curious to see if there's any feedback or insight to anyone who might know exactly what that stuff is. But, and oddly enough, one of the guys said, oh, well, when you mean vintage reenacting, like, what are you, a Civil War reenactor? And I was like, oh, no, I kind of do stuff from the 30s and 40s and use the gear. And, he's always, oh, okay, well, that's good, because a few years back we had an American Civil War reenactor do all 4 days in his kit, and he said that, like, he was just dying in the wool, and it didn't end very well.
There was another comment that was on Facebook that I liked, and this was from Franz Bonnerkampf. I'm just going to read part of his response. He had written, I'm currently a postgraduate student at a prestigious university in the UK. I live in constant fear that the department I study under or my peers discover the hobby. Apart from a few bumps during my undergraduate years, I've become quite good at covering it up. There have been several close calls recently, notably why I disappeared for a weekend and came back smelling like wet wool and with a head injury. I came up with a story about being on a camping trip with the boys, etc. I'm open to interested parties about medieval and early modern reenacting, as these are usually interpreted as harmless, but an odd thing to do nonetheless. If I fear that someone may have an untoward reaction to dressing up as a Second World War German soldier on the weekends, I will simply not tell them. To my current understanding, many academics do not understand the hobby in any sense, or at worst, see it as a zero-value extension of common pop histories, which, when looking at the public scene, may not be incorrect. My interest in 15th century reenactment is seen by my peers as a bizarre eccentricity, but simply a way of expressing my studies in a physical medium while doing something fun, but definitely of little to no academic value. In short, I fear that I would lose any credibility and at worst be removed from my studies if I were exposed as a Second World War dress-up enthusiast. I've heard stories of students being removed for much smaller offenses. Maybe in later years I'll become more liberal with my attitudes, but that is not the case as of now. Ludwig, you know him, right? You know Franz?
I know Franz very well. And a couple of months ago, before an event, the same event at which he acquired that head injury, we were enjoying a rather enjoyable night, rather good night in a pub at the area where we were setting off from the day before the event. And we were quaffing quite a few pints, maybe slightly more than we should have been. But we were joined by these lovely ladies that came over to join us, and they decided, you know, we were going to go and sit with this weird group of guys. We're going to go and talk to them. So they came over and they were talking to us. And they asked us what we were doing in the town that we were in. And everybody else seemed to come up with these ridiculous stories about how we were either international terrorists, or we were Greenpeace workers, or we were there to do some land cultivation or something like that. So I just started to explain to them that we were, in fact, irrespective of the ridiculous comments of my friends, we were, in fact, historical reenactors. And as I was saying this, Franz put his hand over my mouth to stop me and said, "Shh, no, don't say that." You know, and eventually I just told them straight out what it was that we were. And obviously nothing happened because these two girls didn't give a damn and were just happy to sit and talk to us. But he was so scared that they would, you know, that they would be, I don't know what he was expecting, that they would be secret agents for the university at which he studies. They were going to report back that he'd been encountered in this town, you know, 40 miles south of where he is, and that this should be, you know, dealt with accordingly. I understand his concern, but I think there is an over-egging of it a little bit. I think in university circles, you probably have to be quite careful. And the reason for that is that so many of these so-called terrorists and extremists come from promising university students, and that perhaps creates this atmosphere. But there, you know, it was just a bit of good fun, and there was no need for such worry over something like that. But yeah, that's my only reaction.
He was telling them is that they were there, that you were there for land cultivation, or what did you say?
yeah, we were. Yeah. So it went from. I think if you had to tier it went from we were international terrorists, hell bent on doing something cataclysmic, to land cultivation at the end of it. I can't remember. There were various different stories, but land cultivation, we were there to help. I mean, this is, bearing in mind that this is in December, or February. This is in February. I'm not sure exactly what land cultivation we'd be helping with at that stage, but
I think, you know, that's so fantastic.
I would rather be a historical reenactor than some man working on the farms in February when there isn't even anything really to do, as far as I understand. You know,
we had an absolutely comical thing that happened where I'm not going to get too into the story, but it was at a restaurant and the waitress was like, what are you guys doing? And someone's like, we're hunting. And they were like, are you hunting in the state forest? You know, they named some place in that town. My friend said, yeah, we're hunting in that town. She said, oh, really? That's really weird. You know, my father hunts there, and I don't think that the hunting season is open. I don't think you're allowed to hunt in there this time of year. What exactly are you hunting in there? Who are you hunting with? And we were just like, I don't know, man. Jeez. You know, this was obviously the wrong thing to say to this person. She busted us, basically. I should have said with land cultivation. In the future, I'll say that something one could know anything about. You know, what are you guys doing? Oh, we reclaim next marshlands. Time. You know, we're here to do marshland reclamation.
Next time you're on your double stop to from Chick-fil to Burger King, you need to say, look, I'm sorry, but you got us. We got to go and till some land.
That is now the new reenacting cultural norm. Every reenactor must say land cultivation.
Land cultivation, yeah.
All right, just for disclaimer, I don't think he literally said land okay. cultivation, but it was something on those kind. It was on those kind of lines. I'm gonna deal with the whole thing for this, but it was something like that.
I love it. There was one other comment I wanted to reference from the Facebook thread that was from a GI reenactor whose name is Pat. He said, as a GI, someone has to be the bad guy in order for this whole thing to work. He's got the bad guy in quotations there. That said, I think a lot of Germans don't really understand the gravitas and do a poor job of public historical interpretation beyond the military aspect, which, to be honest, is hard to do. Like, it's hard to parse out the historical interest in World War II German military history from the social context from when it takes place, and do that in the 3 to 5 minutes you have with the public around you, and do so in a manner that doesn't come across as cringe. And I think that was a very astuteful comment from Pat. I know exactly what he's talking about. So, relatable stuff.
To get that full immersion in 3,000 meters, it snowed on us. It was frost at night, sleeping under cell phones. Yeah, it was a great experience being on that location, being in the Alps, wearing the uniform and being with like-minded guys.
Hey, it's a real pleasure to be here as a long-time listener and someone whose long drives to reenactments are filled with the sounds of the Reenactors Corner podcast. It's a bit of a fanboy moment.
The Reenactors Corner, bringing history to life. We have blown way past our time limit, and Mike, a.k.a. Retroman, the editor, is going to have his work cut out for him on this one. Was there anything else you guys wanted to say before we wrap this one up?
I was just going to say, this episode for me there is so much I could say, but I've tried to express as much as I could of it in the shortest possible time. But essentially, I have dealt with the whole remit of things that you could expect to deal with in reenacting. In my view, through my reenacting 17 years, I've dealt with everything that you could think of, from relationships to family members to having the police at your door. I've dealt with all of it. For me, unless you have something that you have to protect, as Chris has expressed, and which I find is more than an explanation for having to be a bit more reserved about this, there is no shame and no harm in explaining what this hobby is, what it is about. You know, if you do this hobby for political reasons, I'd give a different sort of speech on it. But if you do it for the hobby itself, then I would say there is no harm in being quite forthright with it and saying that I spend my time doing this hobby because it is what I enjoy doing, and it is in many respects what I like to invest my time and my efforts in, and I'll keep doing it irrespective of how many people judge me or what they spend their time worrying over. So that is all I really have to add to the discussion, is that it is what it is, and reenacting probably won't hold its cultural position. I mean, it won't necessarily hold it anyway, but it won't hold its cultural position anyway if people are not forthright in explaining what it really is and what it, to me, in the last 17 years, has always been about. To every friend and every family member and every relationship I've had, it has always been about reenacting, not some secret ulterior motive to bring back the Fourth Reich or something like that. That's it.
Yeah, you know, I think honestly, we could probably do a broaching the topic of German reenacting part two, or even a Patreon. Ludwig, I know you had many more stories to tell, and we had talked about, you know, introducing our war rooms to people and our collections and on and on and on. But I really do think it's just about being honest with yourself. And yes, it's a little tongue in cheek in terms of, am I more guarded about how I relay my interest and passion in World War II German reenacting? Yes. Am I as brazen as I once was 13 years ago? No, of course not. Do I have multiple accounts? Yes. But at the end of the day, it's about being honest with the people who come in and out of your life, whether they come in and they stay or whether they come in momentarily and leave again. And I think it's just being honest with yourself. You know, I tell people that World War II German reenacting and being a member in Kloosterlöchlin is the one thing that truly brings me joy and passion, and researching and understanding this time period and trying to live it through living history. Now, obviously, there's a lot of things in my life that bring me joy and passion, but this is one of the ones that's right at the top. And I need to be honest with myself about that. And I need to be honest with that passion to people who come in my life. Now, they can accept it or they can't, you know. And in recording this podcast and talking to Ludwig, I now have the utmost confidence in making my Tinder profile a picture of me and my Ausgehenanzug, just confidently. So I'll let you know how that goes.
Well, good luck.
Yeah, do it. What could people love more than a man in uniform? What could they love more? I mean, if they don't like that, then they're probably not worth engaging with anyway. You probably dodged a bullet there, so go for it. All of my best pictures are from reenacting. Everything else is absolute dross, so I'm reduced to this existence, and I just live it, you know. I live
well,
it.
Well, I will say we've spoken with veterans who said that they specifically joined the Cross Deutschland because the ladies just swooned when they saw the Cross Deutschland Wachregiment parading through Berlin and with the Armelstreifen, and so that's the whole reason why they joined up.
So now you have the modern Tinder-oriented excuse to put onto your profile that you're a member of the Wachregiment Cross Deutschland. And they'll know. They'll Google Translate it, and they'll know immediately they'll be talking to you.
You know, a funny thing is that if people were like, hey, do you do this because you're a Nazi? And you said, I'm doing this to get laid, they probably would be fine with that.
Why are people like this is my question, you know? Like, when we were in Munich, I had somebody said to me, your haircut is very reminiscent of the 40s style, but you're still hot. And I was like, well, what's the problem then? Surely that's the intent. Surely that's the purpose. Why do you even feel the need to mention that? But I take the compliment anyway.
We could probably do a Patreon episode, or like you say, or another episode of this in the future. But it's been great talking to you guys. So thanks for coming on, and thanks everyone for listening to this one.
Always a pleasure.
Yep, pleasure as ever.
See you in the field.
See you in the field.
We love hearing what you think about the podcast. So why not reach out to us on Facebook or Discord? Just search for The Reenactor's Corner and you'll find us there. And if you've enjoyed this episode, please consider supporting us via Patreon. Your generous contributions, no matter how big or small, really do keep us on the air, and you'll also get regular additional exclusive episodes as a thank you. You can find details of where to find us on Patreon in the show notes. Thanks for listening, and we hope you'll join us again next time here on The Reenactor's Corner.